Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to CLNS Radio, your source for all things basketball.
You cannot stop this guy. This guy is unbelievable right now. And with the way he's playing, he's played an outstanding brand of basketball. You're trying to tell me he's not the next best thing? What are you hearing?
Man, all I know is this guy can ball. And if you can come out and play with him, you can play with anybody in the league.
I want your opinion. Call into the show.
Why don't you drive the rack? Seriously, why don't people drive the rack more often?
I'm fed up with this cookie-cutter brand of basketball. Now go out and hand-check.
What are you comparing? The guy's got grit. The guy's got moxie, and the guy's got heart. What more do you want?
Ambition. He did a dream that was harder to live.
Broadcast through Blog Talk Radio and CLNS Radio.
They gonna love me for my ambition.
Welcome to the Hooper's Log.
He did a dream that was harder to live.
Here's your host, Simo Buckley.
They gonna love me for my ambition.
Welcome on into episode 139 episodes today on CLNS Radio in the SeatGeek Studios. My name is Simo Buckets, and no Andrew Norris today, for he again is super, super busy at work. I don't know if you heard, but he's got about 70 to 80 hours a week. It's crazy. He's working like 150 hours a week on top of his tryouts for baseball. He has been a very, very, very busy man, and we all understand here on the Hooper's Log, episode 139. We're going to recap what happened last night in the NBA. Not a ton to recap, not a ton to go over, but the NBA playoffs between the Spurs and the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Spurs are done. The San Antonio Spurs are now officially done. And the crappy part about it is that the San Antonio Spurs, I think their trio's done as well, and I don't know if you've been watching me on Twitter lately, but I've been talking about the greatest trios of all time, and obviously this trio of Ginobili and Parker and Tim obviously are a top five trio. I mean, obviously there's a bunch of trios that are tough to notice, but overall it's a tough thing to talk about, and I think I've narrowed it down to the top three. And if you'd like to call in, the phone number is 323-642-1558 is the number. And it's been one of those years where, I mean, I'm not shocked as a Spurs fan seeing what happened with the Oklahoma City Thunder and Spurs series. I'm not. I'm really not. I expected this not for them to lose. I expected them to win. But for them to have it be a tough series and even lose, I mean, it wouldn't have been a shocker if they lost. And I said that coming into the series, it was going to be a knockdown drag out. And what's fascinating is from the beginning of the series all the way to the very end, it went from a, you know, Spurs dominate game one. Everyone's talking about the Kevin Durant potentially leaving and doing things. And then all of a sudden, you know, game two, the craziness of the refs, obviously, on top of the Spurs didn't play necessarily well. People looked at it as kind of like a fluke, so it was a 1-1 series going back to Oklahoma City. Then the Spurs bounced back and had an unbelievable – I mean, that was one of the best games I've seen the Spurs play from a mental toughness perspective on the road. They bounced back, 2-1 series lead. Oklahoma City bounces back with their own victory. Kevin Durant played great. And I think – and this is – and I'm going to bring this analogy up a lot. If you'd like to call on the phone number again, 323-642-1558. 1558. Kevin Hart, let's get it going.
You're going to learn today.
Yeah, let's get it going here on the Hooper's Log again, episode 139, on a Friday, May 13th. Friday the 13th? The last weekly show we've done. Look, we've been doing this hard since November 2nd. I've repeated them myself. But let's get back to the point. The Spurs and Thunder. Look, this was everything. Everyone expected this series going the way it went all the way up until game four, and then game five happened. And I'm going to just tell you something. I think in Game 5, and everyone's been talking about Steven Adams and Enes Kanter and their impact performance on what they've done, the San Antonio Spurs did something in 2014 when they beat the Heat in the NBA Finals, where I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in Game 5, the series was tied 2-2. I believe it went to overtime. And when it went to overtime, and then it went to a game six, Corey Joseph stepped up, I mean, immensely. That was one of those moments where you knew your team. I don't know what it was, but after that moment, it just felt like we were destined to win the title in 2014 as a Spurs fan. After Corey Joseph did what he did against the Thunder in overtime, you just felt like we were just destined. Something said in my ear, this is our year. It's us. You know, the year we lost to the Heat, obviously we choked in game six. But for some reason, it didn't feel like we even ever had a chance. Even though Ray Allen's shot was unbelievable, I mean, obviously I thought we had won the title in game six. But for some reason, even though that game went the way it was, the whole series, I felt like we weren't meant to win the series. You know, and I know this is hindsight's 2020. Obviously, we had a chance. The series went back and forth in game, you know, one of the greatest series we've ever seen in 2013 between the Heat and Spurs, and the Spurs lost. Everyone thought the trio was over. They came back, won the title. And then the year after, they lost to the Clippers last year in the playoffs. Obviously, that happened. And then this year, for some reason, though, this game, game five, obviously 2 games ago, prior to last night's game, I felt like after that one, it was the Thunder's – this is the Thunder's year. Now, are they going to win the title? I don't think so. I don't know. But for some reason, something tells me that after – something clicked in game five, or as a team, on the road, second time they beat San Antonio on the road in the series. And on top of that, Russell Westbrook played a great basketball game. Enes Kanter, Steven Adams, big-time threats down low, shifting on defense, playing unbelievable athletic defense. It was awe-inspiring. And from that perspective and watching these two teams duke it out, I'm telling you, I think the Thunder going into this – and look, this is what will – you know, from the other perspective of the Warriors, this if the Thunder win this series over the Warriors and then they go to the NBA Finals, we're going to see – look, LeBron and KD, I think this is the year. I think – if this is the matchup we all want to see, and look, we saw this back in 2012, but a little different because KD was a little bit younger. That team was a little bit younger, not fully developed where they were. Yes, they had James Harden, but you could make the debate that their bench was not ready. They did not have the bench ready enough to play the Heat at that point. But this will be the year where I think, honest to God, I mean, Kyrie, Russell Westbrook, LeBron, KD. I'm not discounting the Warriors at all. I think the Warriors can easily get to the NBA Finals. Not easily, but they can get there. But to get back to my point, if the Warriors beat this Thunder team, and I'm saying this as a objective fan, as a Spurs fan altogether, look, we should have beaten the Thunder. We should have. But something clicked, and people have been saying this team got old overnight. I don't disagree. I think the Spurs, what everyone anticipated the Spurs to do throughout the entire year, they saw in one microcosm of this series between the Thunder and Spurs. They got old real fast. I mean, real fast. Tim Duncan looked like if he wants to come back, he's going to be like a 10 to 15 minute guy, third option off the bench, you know, fills in parts and spurts in the first half and will finish down the stretch. That's all he's going to be at the end of it. That's all he's going to be now if he wants to come back. Outside of that, you can't use him anymore. He just can't play offense. Defensively, he can be a defensive specialist, a lot like Chris Birdman from on the Heat, you know. But anything more than that, you're not going to get it. Manu Ginobili, I think Manu's been done for the last 3 years. Since 2013, Ginobili has not been any more effective than anyone else coming off that bench. I mean, that's just the way it's been. I mean, do I love the guy? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, 13 years of this trio – 5 Western Conference Finals championships, 4 NBA championships. You can't really complain with this trio. It's been one of the greatest trios of all time. Not the greatest, in my opinion. I think the Lakers are the greatest. They had 7-year run, 6 Western Conference championships in that run, on top of not just that run, but they also found a way to, not just affect that run, but they also won 4 championships. I mean, they won 4 championships in that span. Excuse me, 3 championships. They won 3 championships out of their 6 times getting to the top. I mean, unbelievable stuff. It's crazy. It's crazy. So the Thunder move on. They're amazing. And we do have a caller on the line. I believe this is Chris. His Twitter handle online is I'm Just Greatness. And I believe he's on the line right now. Here he is, 253. Is this you, Chris?
Yeah, what's up, man?
Hey, dude, how's it going? What's going on? How's life going?
Oh, it's good, man. Enjoying this playoff basketball.
Hey, man, I saw your article. And by the way, for those of you that don't know, this guy wrote an article today. You should go check it out. It's on simplyhoopsblog.com. It's NBA playoff format. And it's fascinating. And I think, you know, from the standpoint of where, you know, college basketball is, obviously with the 68 team play-in, how they don't really necessarily use a, you know, Western, Eastern like the pros do. But the idea of the reseeding isn't actually a genius idea, because if you think about it, the Golden State Warriors this year, no debate, best team in the NBA. I mean, no debate. But number two was the Spurs. Number three, realistically, was Cleveland. If you really did reseed it, I mean, and with the way that the NBA is now, not just the NBA, but sports in the – look, the old adage of the NBA being a Western and Eastern Conference thing was based upon travel alone. Look, this is what's fascinating to me. I don't know why the NBA hasn't done this, you know, within the last 10, 15 years, just to be honest, because, you know, look at baseball. Baseball's been doing this for hundreds of years. I mean, over 100 years now, where they've gone coast to coast, you know, played teams, National League, whether it's the Mets, whether it's the Dodgers, whether it's, you know, San Francisco Giants, and then going back over there to play, you know, Boston and New York, and then going up to Seattle, where we live up in this region. It's a fascinating debate. And it doesn't shock me into why the NBA doesn't do this already. They've already made a step coming into this season stating whoever gets the necessary seedings, no matter what you do winning your division, you're going to be seated where your record is. They've made that step. I think the next step is to make this an overall seated base. And the reason why is because, like you've mentioned in your article, you've got teams like the Cleveland Cavaliers where – just look at the Eastern Conference. Look, and it's no knock on the Hawks. It's no knock on the Pistons. Look, we all said coming into the postseason – that the Pistons were going to be a team that were probably going to test the Cavs more than likely, because they were a team that were probably the toughest test for the Cavs. But when you look at the Eastern Conference, if the second best team in the East is the Toronto Raptors, and that's no knock on them, their playoff history has been junk for the last 15 years. And you've seen it this postseason with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. That really isn't a team tested for the postseason. Now, in your bracket that you made on your article, again, for those of you not listening, is simplyhoops.sportsblog.com. NBA playoff format is the title. You know, the Toronto would be the fourth seed, but Oklahoma City would be the fifth seed. That would be a fascinating second round series if that were to be the case. And maybe even Detroit would beat a team like Toronto in the first round. You know, could you explain what you talked about in this article and your reasoning behind why the NBA should reseed?
Basically, I was really just paying attention to the playoff basketball we had. Even with the Warriors only losing two games in the first two rounds, those first two rounds were still exciting basketball. As far as for Cleveland, right, they didn't lose a game at all, and it was just boring. You know, nobody really wanted to watch
right.
those games. And with the Eastern Conference, now you watch Toronto and Miami, and it's just sloppy, It's tough grinding out, just disgusting basketball. And also I was thinking about how, you know, a lot of kind of Kobe fans, but people pretty much go at LeBron for playing in the East, and you notice that he does play on the weaker side of the NBA. So I kind of had to break it down and really look at it. And after I made the bracket, you see at the bottom, Cleveland would be a 3 seed, and they would have played Dallas in the first round. And in the second round, they probably would have played the Clippers. Now, Cleveland versus the Clippers in the second round will be a much bigger, you know, that's a much harder
CP3 and Kyrie Irving, sign me up.
Sign me up.
Exactly. That is a nasty duo right there.
It'll be just the different seating will be, it'll just be much more entertaining for the fans. And somebody actually tweeted me just now saying that the travel will be bad. And look, these guys are millionaires. They fly private.
Right.
They have comfortable seats. They have the best hotels, all of this money. So I don't wear any crap about traveling, because you literally have the best travel. You're good. You're all right. So I think that Commissioner Adam Silver needs to go ahead and make this happen. You know, I definitely believe that this will make the playoffs much more watchable. You know, nobody wants to watch the Cavs walk to the finals and they're well-rested playing against a beat-up Western Conference team, you know, whereas like, it's just not – even when you go to the playoffs, because the Hawks And like you said, the Hawks and the Raptors were behind Cleveland, but significantly far. Whereas on the West, you have Golden State, San Antonio's there, OKC, and then even behind them you have Clippers, and then Portland, which is obviously they did a phenomenal job in the playoffs. And I just think that it's so unbalanced for the playoffs to do much better than they are now. We need to get rid of the whole conference thing, because it's now in the NFL, the divisions matter. You know, that kind of plays a bigger role as far as you getting your playoff seeding. But in NBA, if divisions don't matter, just pass out the banners, and then we'll seed up based on the top 16 teams. We would have got to see a pretty decent Chicago team over a very mediocre Houston team.
Yeah. Exactly. No, and I don't disagree with you at all. And another thing, too, and the NBA, and I want to ask you this question because I think it's a pretty solid question when it comes to this article. I know you didn't – I tend to just think of ideas on the fly sometimes. Sometimes they don't work. 90% of the times all of our ideas are junk. But this is an idea that I've had for a long time. And I know it would be unconventional, but the NBA already does something unconventional with the lottery. Look, I mean, how many other sports leagues do a thing where they use ping pong balls to decide who gets the first pick? I mean, realistically, we all know. I mean, come on, that's unconventional. So this unconventional thinking myself, you know how college football has a committee to decide who gets the final four teams? You know how the college basketball does its own committee? I think, and look, I love your idea. I do. I also think the idea of keeping it Western Conference and Eastern Conference should still stay the way it is. But at the same time, and the one problem with doing, like you said, you know, you could easily do it where you have leagues like in baseball, you know, American National League or something of that nature. But I think in the NBA, what would make it even more intriguing and more equipped with the fans, and to get the fans more involved, because let's be honest, there's a lot of people, and with where the NBA wants to go if they want to get bigger and make more money, I feel like if they incorporated people like us, fans who know the game, you know, people on like Twitter or people on Facebook or people on, and that it would be kind of like the NFL voting for the Pro Bowl, you know, 30% of the fan vote, 30% of a committee, and 30% of the seating. So, and I think this would be – it's just an idea. But have it be like, you know, we all know. If we were – just for example, we all know everyone would put Golden State number one. That's not a debate, not even a debate. I think everyone would put San Antonio at two. I think everyone would put Cleveland at three, the top teams. But I think what would make it more fascinating from the standpoint of considering how watered down the league – I mean, I'm going to be honest. Look, the top teams over the last – 15, 20, since the Bird Magic era, I think even the entire history of the NBA, really, there's only been about four or five amazing teams every year. Outside of that, the rest is kind of up in the air. I think what should happen, this would be a good idea just from this perspective, have the top five teams have to battle in. You know, from the standpoint, Golden State would be an automatic, San Antonio automatic, Cleveland, Oklahoma City, the Clippers, maybe even a team like Toronto, obviously rewarding them with a great year, an automatic bid. I think the other 10, 9 teams in the NBA, that should be up to a committee and on top of performance, but on top of, like, fan vote. I think that would be an unbelievable way to get teams into the postseason, and it would also eliminate the opportunity for teams to tank. What if, for example, like you said, with Houston and Chicago, because they're – I mean, maybe it would be better to actually have, like, a bottom four do this. But not have half the league. But, like, let's say, what if a team like Chicago, you know, like you said, really good team, would have made a postseason thing like you had here. But what if you had, like, people voting on whether Houston or Chicago gets in, and then you had a committee decide on top of it, and that helped decide them get in? Like, something of that nature where it became more interactive. We all know that a team who plays Golden State in the first round is probably going to get dominated. But what if the fans decided to create a bracket, vote for their own bracket, and it went through, and then you had a committee look at the bracket, make some tweaks, and then look at their schedule? I think that would make it more interactive because, like you said, in the first round, it would be what everyone wanted to vote for. It would create more topics for discussion. It would create more interaction with the fans. It would create more – I think people would be more engaged down the stretch of the season because, let's be honest, we all know baseball is a 6-month endeavor. We all know football is only like a 4-month endeavor. People generally don't check into the NBA until about after Christmas and even after the Super Bowl. And I think when people start watching the game down the stretch, they see a team like you said, Chicago, or someone who starts off really slow, and then all of a sudden these teams get really hot down the stretch. I mean, super hot down the stretch. And what if all of a sudden they click? Kind of like Oklahoma City in the San Antonio Spurs, you know, series here. I was mentioning it a second ago. I don't know if you heard, but in Game 5, they figured it out. I think they have completely found an identity. What if a team finds an identity and they're on that verge of being right behind Houston or right behind Chicago or something, but they don't quite get in? Like, for example, the Kings. I know the Kings weren't very good this year. I get it. But what if they had something pushing them, like knowing that they had a chance through a committee or the fan vote, and they got in? You got a scary Rajon Rondo. You got a scary Boogie Cousins, and they got all that motivation to come in. Who wouldn't want to tune in to watch Sacramento play Golden State in the first round? We all know Sacramento would get lost, but the TV and the television, at the end of the day, it is all about marketing and television ratings. That would get giant ratings compared to a, let's be honest, Chicago had a lot of injuries this year. They fell off hardcore. But wouldn't it be more entertaining to watch a team like Sacramento play the Golden State Warriors in the first round? Well, we know Golden State's going to win, but it would pose more of a television audience than it would a beat-up Chicago team with a Jimmy Butler coming off injury. Pau Gasol, who got hurt at one point in the year. Derrick Rose, who, as we know, is not the Derrick Rose anymore that we saw 5 years ago. It would change the complexity of it. I know that would be a really hard thing to create, but the NBA is known for unconventional things. What if they decided to do something like that? I just want to kind of throw that idea out there with you. What is your thought of a committee or something? As we know, it needs to change, but what's your idea or what's your thought on that?
I definitely I like that idea of the voting. I think that pretty much every sport is going towards that, you know, like with them trying to incorporate more gambling and things like that. I think having more interaction with fans, because you see how much interaction it is with fans on Twitter now. Like, teams' Twitter accounts are literally tweeting, like, live game tweets during the game now. So with all of the social media interaction, it would be great for fans to actually contribute to the game more. You know, like, I don't think that fans should control it solely, but the way you described it is perfect, where it's a nice balance, where it's a little bit of the coaches and things like that, and then fans, and then just what you do on the court, how you perform. That would be great. I definitely I like your idea. I actually thought of something like that to stop the tanking. And what I was thinking is we could have a tournament instead of it being just the teams that didn't make it are all in the lottery, we'll do the ping pong balls. Instead, I thought of a tournament. Why not have a tournament with all the lottery teams? And at 2 weeks after the NBA season or 3 weeks, have the teams that make the playoffs, they just rest, and then we can actually watch the lottery teams battle it out for the number one pick. So
I think that would be an awesome idea.
And then the league will make so much money from that. More fans can watch. Even if your team didn't make the playoffs, you can still watch them, you know, compete for that high pick. You know, so I think that it'll definitely be a way – that could be a way for – like teams to stop, really stop tanking, because fans don't want to see their team try to lose. You know, like, I couldn't imagine being a 76ers fan right now, so just being terrible for so long and only getting worse. And even though they have the resources to get better, they just don't. And they just consistently try to lose. I don't think that that's good for the league, you know. So I was thinking of if we had a tournament like that, it'd actually be a way to make guys compete, because then they'll want to compete to get that high draft pick. And that'll really expose the people who don't want to compete at all as well.
And you know what? You just brought up a light bulb in my brain that I thought of, you know, and what I was thinking about, and you just said this. I mean, there's 30 teams in the NBA. Obviously, 14 of them don't make the postseason. And what would be fascinating, like you said, have it like the top two teams. Basically, let's just say the two teams that did it. Because again, I just mentioned the theory of having it 30-30-30 or 33-33-33, where you have coaches, a committee, and fans decide how you get teams in. What if the teams that got snubbed, they had a chance at getting a lottery pick? Like, for example, you had Chicago or a team like Sacramento or something, or Houston, for example, teams that were so dang close to getting in, but they got snubbed out of a committee. Those teams could have like a bye week type thing heading into that little lottery thing. And on top of it, we're getting into a point now where we're going to see, you know, the Eastern Conference and Western Conference finals come up, and there's only going to be one game per night. Well, what if they decided to give, like, you know, end of the season, give guys about a week to 2 weeks off, the beginning of May comes, and at random times throughout the year or random times throughout the second round of the playoffs or even Western Conference playoffs leading up to the draft, like even like a week before the draft, they just have these games, these tournament games, where you start to see these lower-seeded teams. Like you see the 76ers play a team like, I don't know, if Sacramento, for example, in this example right now, they play a team like Sacramento or they play like the Denver Nuggets or something. And like you said, it would give them compensation to want to play because I think the team who wins in the lottery should have a higher chance at getting a higher draft pick. Now, again, that would kind of screw with the, you know, obviously teams that are bad and not getting the right draft pick. But I think what it should do is it should allow for those teams to come in and think, hey, we actually got to play well because, like you said, if we don't and we get a really crappy seeding in the lottery selection, we're going to get a crappy draft pick. And so mm-hmm. I think that that will be a way to do it. And then in that tournament you're mentioning, have like a loser's bracket. Have like a black bracket where, like, if the 76ers lose, they got time to prove that they don't want to get a bad draft pick. So the team that ultimately just keeps losing gets the worst draft pick. I think that's the best way to keep, like you said, keep fans of other teams interactive and see what's going on. I mean, the money that's being thrown around the NBA right now, I don't want to hear your excuses about guys not getting paid and compensated for this because you got guys like your Detroit Pistons who got paid 3 years, $20 million last summer. Last time I checked, Aaron Baines was on the San Antonio Spurs, me being a Spurs fan. He came in and played 5 minutes of ball game and grabbed two rebounds and shot one free throw a game. That guy ain't worth $20 million or $7 million a year. I'm sorry. So these guys are going to get compensated enough for these changes to be made. And so if the NBA can find a way to make it more fan-friendly, get every team interacted, find a way to get that lottery system fixed, not just the lottery system, but have the idea you just mentioned, but also make it so that the playoffs are more watching. I'm telling you, this is a way where the NBA could easily just not steal the spotlight from the NFL because I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, but to make it really the newest big fad in basketball where it's going on constantly. And the NBA season's already long enough, but there's teams that, like we just said, who get buried early. Like, for example, this year, the New Orleans Pelicans walked into this year absolutely hampered with injuries. I mean, Tyreke Evans out for a long time. Guys out, you know, Anthony mm-hmm. Davis got hurt at one point. That team is automatically going to be kind of disqualified. But, for example, what if they got off to a hot start, you know, in March after being hurt for a month and a half, and they got a pretty good seeding in the lottery? They could get a high draft pick. That could really help them. They could be, you know, it would change. It would change so much in the sport, and it would create such a good idea. But anything else you want to say before we move on to talking a little bit? I want to talk to you a little bit about this Oklahoma City team.
No, let's do it.
Hey, man, I know you haven't been on the radio very often, but, I mean, hey, I'm a Spurs fan, and I was just talking about how the trio is possibly – it's. I mean, look, and I've been – this is the fascinating part. I'm going to talk about it once Tim Duncan retires officially. I don't know if it'll be this year. If it's not this year, I can guarantee you it will be next year, but it's like a 95% chance he will retire after this year. And Manu yeah. should too. Manu should have retired 3 years ago. But the point is as a Spurs fan, watching this team and watching what they've done since, I would say since, you know what, since about 2008 when the Hornets almost knocked off my Spurs. Because if you remember, I don't know if you remember, Chris, it's been about 8 years. It's been a long time. But I remember I was a junior in high school. I remember hanging out with one of my girlfriends, and I was watching the game, and I was thinking, we're done. Like, this trio is done. Tim Duncan's got plantar fasciitis. Tony Parker can't do it. He's been running up and down the court for 45 minutes a game. Manu's starting to grow a bald spot. You know, it was starting to look kind of bleak because that was after the year they had won the championship against the Cavs. And I was sitting there thinking, good Lord, how are we going to compete with the team, with the NBA coming up? And what's going to happen? And I thought we were done then. 2008, I thought we were done after that. We found a way to bounce back, but obviously the Lakers beat us in that Western Conference Finals to play the Celtics. Celtics won the championship with their trio. That was what happened there. But then, you know, 2009, we only got to the second round. We lost to the Suns. We lost to the Memphis Grizzlies as the one seed, as the eighth seed in 2010. I really thought we were done. And then the next year, we lost to the Thunder. And then we lost to the Heat in the playoffs, to, in my opinion, a top 10 team of all time, the 2012-2013 Heat with the greatest LeBron James we've ever seen, in my opinion, from a team perspective, and in his prime. I mean, I don't like, look, I was looking at YouTube videos the other day, all this Steph Curry craze, bro, go look at LeBron when he was early on with the Heat. That was the scariest player I've ever seen. I mean, seriously, all this conundrum with Steph Curry, go watch LeBron early on with the Heat. It's the scariest thing you'll ever see. But anyway, going back to the point, you know, we lost to the Heat, and granted we lost, we choked against in 2013 in Game 6, but we came back, bounced back, and we won a title. I did not expect that to happen with the same guys. For the last 6-7 years, we've been living on a cloud of rebuilding with getting guys like Kawhi. He's not the second-best player in the league. He's not the second-best MVP. This is a system that is legendary. It is not Kawhi who's carrying that organization. But we're still unbelievable. 67 wins goes to show you how great we are. But seeing how the team played and watching the Thunder, and I wanted to ask this to you, the Thunder were unbelievable. I mean, I'm telling you, we didn't choke away this series. They came out and they flat out balled and they beat us. Mm-hmm. They just flat out beat us. Look, Adams and Cantor and Russell Westbrook finally – look, I don't know if you know this, but I'm the biggest Russell Westbrook fan of all time. That guy reminds me, he is athletically, he's Jordan. Athletically, he's not going to have the legacy of Jordan. He's not going to have any of that. But he is athletically as gifted as Jordan will ever see. Fundamentally, not there, but athletically, he's on par. It's unbelievable what he does, and he showed up in Game 5, and I think that was his anointing to the NBA and saying, look out, here I come. What was your take on this series with the Thunder, and what do you see happening? And I think this is going to be one of the most vicious Western Conference Finals we've seen in quite some time.
First off, I have to say, I have to admit, I'm a Spurs fan myself, but it's not just because of the team or one player. It's just because of the organization, you know, the way they draft the right players. They have Popovich. He leads them correctly. Really humble guys, you know, and they just want to play basketball. I respect them so much for that. As far as the series they had with the Thunder, oh man, it was amazing to see the Thunder finally grow into that team we thought they would be at the beginning of the year. When they had, okay, we see they have Cantor, and you know we see they have Durant. Westbrook is back. Everyone is healthy. New coach, new system. We were all kind of hyped, but when they lost so many games in the fourth quarter in the clutch, everybody kind of started doubting them. And I think that when Russell Westbrook finally started to play under control, the Thunder got better. So I think that him just coming down court full speed, trying to run through the whole defense, it kind of destroys the Thunder offense. You know, once he started to distribute more, he could dribble down full speed, but then slow down and survey the floor, make a better pass. You know, when he changes decision making, that helped. And Billy Donovan finally seen that, okay, if I put Cantor in, that'll be better than having Ibaka. That whole death, it just killed the Spurs. They couldn't compete with that.
Yeah.
They just couldn't compete. And they have so much length on their front line. Tim Duncan just isn't athletic enough like he used to be to where he can compete with those guys. And LaMarcus Aldridge is that kind of player to where he's going to go out and dive on the floor. And, you know, and then Aldridge also affected the Spurs offense, you know, because they used to be a team where they moved the ball a lot, and he's a guy where it has to be one-on-one. I mean, it worked. It did work. He looked great in his first few games. But once the Thunder figured it out, it was over. You just could kind of see it on Tim Duncan's face. When he went up for that dunk and Ibaka got him, it was just – he just looked defeated. He just kind of walked to the bench and he had this look like, this might be it for me, you know. But I think that I love how the Thunder have grown in the playoffs. You know, in these first two rounds, they really grew a lot. You know, they seem like they got better as a team. It's just – you can literally see it when they play. They trust each other more. Roberson played better. Deion Waiters, Deion Waiters hater. I'm always on him because he just stagnates the offense, you know. So now they're playing such. I'm just ready for this series to start because I don't know who's going to win. I want to say the Warriors, but the way the Thunder are playing and the way the Warriors have been playing, I can see it going 7 games and Kevin Durant hitting a buzzer beater and they're going to the final. That part wouldn't surprise me because the Thunder have grown so much.
You know, it's fascinating. You mentioned a great point about, you know, Billy Donovan and you talk about how they switched up on Kanter and Ibaka. Look, it's kind of like when you're playing. I hate to use a football analogy on a basketball show, but it's kind of like when you have Peyton Manning at the helm, and then you decide you're not working. Let's use Brock Osweiler, and you start winning games still, but you get better offensively. It's kind of the exact same thing that happened with the Oklahoma City Thunder, because Serge Ibaka has been the old guard there. And he, don't get me wrong, 2-3 years ago when we played him in the playoffs, I've always been terrified of Ibaka because he can shoot from the outside, unbelievable defender, but he is aging. And Kanter is a young face, same with Adams, young faces on the front line, like you said. And I'm telling you, After game four, I think Greg Popovich, deep down, got a little scared from the standpoint of there's no answer. There was no answer for Kanter, no answer for Adams down low with ball movement. And even when, and they were talking about it on the broadcast, as you heard, they're saying, oh, this is the most stagnant I've seen the Spurs offense. The reason why the offense was so stagnant was because when they were trying to make passes on the outside to break down the defense on the inside, Adams and Kanter were rotating with perfection. And when you have perfect rotation, you almost can't make the pretty passes inside, weaving in and out like the Spurs are used to doing. But when you have perfect rotation on the inside defensively, it just freaks you out. It doesn't matter how talented you are of a basketball team passing the ball. If you have perfect rotation and you're scatterbrained defensively, you're going to freak out a team like the Spurs, because and to be 100% honest, outside of LaMarcus Aldridge, they don't have a guy, and Kawhi is getting there, but I don't think he's going to get to that level people are expecting him to get to. But for the most part, you don't have a guy that can create off the dribble and score with help in the paint, and Kawhi can't do that. Kawhi can score if there's no one in the paint and he can beat a guy off the dribble. He can do that, but when there's someone meeting him at the rim, he's useless. It's the same with LaMarcus on the perimeter, on the mid-range game. When someone's there to meet him inside, he can't do anything, and that's the whole Spurs team. And the Oklahoma City Thunder figured that out in game four. They figured it out game five and game six. And the thing is that's scary is that I'm not going to sit here and say that it's an automatic that they're going to do the same thing to the Warriors, but look, if you got a guy like Billy Donovan, and this is what's interesting because – you know, 2 years ago when the Golden State Warriors didn't make the postseason because they got hurt and all that, Mark Jackson was the head coach. Mark Jackson was the guy who helped create the system in Golden State. No one's giving him credit. You know, people who are bandwagon Golden State fans and looking at all that, you know, they look at this and they're like, oh, yeah, you know, Steve Kerr is the greatest thing. He's like, did you watch Mark Jackson develop those players? Did you watch him instill that will to win in that organization? He helped them. He just couldn't get them over the top. Scottie Brooks did the exact same thing in Oklahoma City. He helped instill that organization, get the chemistry going, but then Billy Donovan is now making the little tweaks. I'm telling you, he ain't doing much, but he's now figuring out and making the little tweaks that are necessary for this team. And after those two games, something felt different to me watching those games against the Spurs, and you saw him make the tweaks that were necessary to beat, in my opinion, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, runs in sports history of the San Antonio Spurs from a standpoint of consistency. And they made Greg Popovich look like a fool. And if you can make Greg Popovich look like a fool at his own game with what he does, that is a system for success. And going forward, as the Oklahoma City Thunder will, playing the Golden State Warriors, as an Oklahoma City fan, and the best part about it is, I mean, I don't think Golden State would look at it as a team that would choke away the series, choke away a season at this point, because they got to the Western Conference Finals. I said before the playoffs, as long as they get to the Western Conference Finals, it's not a choke. Because look, the West is brutal, it's deep, and now that they're playing the Thunder and Cavs in the next two rounds, look, if they don't win the title, we understand this is going to be brutal. But from the standpoint of the Thunder figuring out what they need to do to be successful, I think they finally, in game four and especially game five, they found a way to stay close, get their system going, get their guys going, and finish out with the two best players in the game on the same team, at least from the standpoint of a duo in the league. I mean, Russ Westbrook and Durant are two of the top two players in the league, and they found a way, not even individually, they found a way to trust their teammates, believe in Billy Donovan's system down the stretch, and they found ways to make adjustments to absolutely dominate the San Antonio Spurs, and they did. They look, and as a Spurs fan, the games were close, they were epic, but you're going to get that with a well-run organization, a team that's never going to die, never going to quit. But Oklahoma City did it twice on the road against them and going to play the Golden State Warriors with this new team and this new system that they have in place, I don't think the Warriors will know how to prepare for this. And look, and here's the scary part about that. In the regular season, which again, another regular season won't mean much now going into the playoffs as every team really looks different, but Oklahoma City was playing their old system, and they still pushed overtime games against the Warriors. What do you think is going to happen in this round? I mean, it is going to be, I'm telling you, this Western Conference Finals is going to be absolutely crazy. And, Chris, what's your opinion on what's going to happen in the Western Conference Finals?
This series really depends on who breaks first. Because the Warriors will play, when it's crunch time, they'll play their small ball. And the Thunder are going to go to what works best for them, this new lineup with Cantor, Ibaka on the bench. So if the Warriors are playing small and the Thunder are basically playing big, whichever team performs the best and executes, the other team will have to go, okay, we're going to have to go back and I guess the Warriors will bring back in Azeeley or Bogut to compete with Cantor, but I don't think that lineup can beat the Thunder. See, that's what I'm thinking here, that if the Thunder lineup can continue to produce, that great lineup can continue to produce and put up points and get big stops on defense, the Warriors will have to go big, and their bigs simply can't compete with the Thunder bigs at all, even if one's coming off the bench. They just couldn't compete with them on that level. So I think it's going to go seven games, definitely. I'm going to still say Warriors in seven. I still say Warriors in seven, but the one thing that did happen in the season series, the Thunder had 50 turnovers in those three games. And that's just – in the playoffs, you can't have those kind of turnovers. So if they can find a way to take care of the ball, then they might have a better chance. But right now, I still have to go with the Warriors. It's just Steph came back and lit up Portland. It was just – that was insane, man. And with the way Draymond is playing, I don't think people understand how valuable Draymond Green is.
Like, if I had a vote for
MVP, he would be my MVP vote. Because
he
is literally, when it comes to players that do it all, LeBron is at the top, and he's literally second. If you think about it, he can guard pretty much every player in the league. He guards most centers.
Yeah.
He guards most of the quickest, fastest point guards. He guards those guys. And then we'll get the rebound, take the ball up the floor, and then make a perfect pass. And he can run the offense, and he can be your defensive anchor. And battle for you in transition going both ways. Like Draymond, the Warriors are getting every penny from him, every penny. I think that he's very undervalued. So, but I think the biggest X factor for the Warriors will be Harrison Barnes. He has to find his stroke. He has to earn his contract this summer, man. You know, and if he doesn't, I'm not sure the Warriors will even try to keep him around, even though they should. But he's that guy that they need to. They need that one extra guy to play well, and he's that guy behind Clay and Curry and Draymond. Harrison Barnes has to compete. He has to. I'm not saying score 30 or even 20. He just has to get maybe 15 points, maybe 4 or 5 good rebounds, a couple of assists. He needs to compete well on offense and defense, because sometimes he's going to be that guy guarding Durant. And Durant has been scoring up – he scored absurd against the Warriors. You know, he had a 30, shooting 50% from three. You just can't have that, you know. And I really think that this is going to be one of the best series we've ever seen. I'm ready. I'm hyped
too, man. Hey, it's going to be on Monday night. We got about a minute left. We do have callers on the line. If you want to call in, we'll get to you. We're going to go past the live edition, and we're going to go into the podcast to take your calls. But we got a call from the 360, and he's on. Yes, he is. He's on the hotline bling. He's on the Drake hotline. So, 360, where are you from? How you doing? Who are you?
Hey, what's going on, man? Long-time listener, long-time caller, man. Just wanted to call
Absolutely.
In a little bit and talk a little bit about the Thunder and the upcoming Thunder Golden State series. And what's kind of funny is I was sitting here listening to you guys on hold talking about the X factors to this upcoming series, and not one of you talked about the rebounding. And quite as it's kept Oklahoma City out rebounded San Antonio, which was kind of a surprising turn of events, considering they didn't just do it on the defensive end, they did it on the offensive end. And what's going to be interesting about this upcoming series, I actually think that's going to be a huge factor in this upcoming series. I don't necessarily think it's going to be one player, but it's going to have to be a collective. And I'll tell you what, not only is it going to have to be on the glass, but Oklahoma City is going to have to play some lockdown D for four games in order to capture this series. Period. Point blank. They're going to have to do what nobody else in this league has been able to do all season long. Let me rephrase that: for the last two seasons.
It's true. I mean, from the standpoint of rebounding the basketball, this Oklahoma City team has to be able to find a way to capture the boards like they did against San Antonio. And here's the thing. I know San Antonio does not have the offensive firepower that the Oklahoma City Thunder do when it comes to Klay, when it comes to Draymond, when it comes to Steph, especially Steph. But they do have a similar system. And when it comes to fundamental basketball, the Oklahoma City Thunder found a way to nip it in the bud against San Antonio. And that is the beginning point. And if they play like that as a starting block, then I think the rebounding and the opportunity to beat Golden State down low is a highly possibility. And I know the Golden State Warriors are chippy, and they got Festus, they got Bogut, they got a couple other guys down there that can compete down low and get offensive and defensive rebounds when they necessarily need it. But that, like you said, rebounding really, I think, from the standpoint of the Thunder and their ability to compete with the Golden State Warriors, is going to be a big factor. And that's going to be a big factor in the series because both teams have the offensive firepower to compete. But defensively, it's going to be an amazing circumstance there. Is this Steve Silver? Is this Steve Silver?
You know it is.
Hey, man, that's my guy. Hey, you know, we all know what's going on in Seattle. This is my – what's up?
So when you see the 3-6, just automatically calling from right outside of Everett, Washington, and you know where that's
absolutely
just about 30 minutes north of Seattle. So, anyways, man. Yep. So here's the thing, man. And I'm gonna say this just like this, and I don't want this to seem like I'm taking anything away from the Oklahoma City Thunder because, well, quite frankly, here's what I will take away everything from the Oklahoma City Thunder because obviously, as you know, I'm a Sonics fan, not a Thunder fan. And so we can just put that to a side because we'll just put that to the side right now. But the thing about this is number one, put it in the context of this. This is the last run of the Oklahoma City Thunder with this crew. And the window ends right here. So of course they're going to have to play. Now they took advantage of a San Antonio Spurs team, and think of it this way. Greg Popovich is a dude that relies heavily on the guys that have got him there before and that know how to win. We've seen Greg Popovich do this time and time again. And I think in this series, when you just don't have the legs, and I think I saw this in the early part of the series, when it looks like maybe they may or may not have the legs, they have a couple games left in the tank, but for the most part, if you're going to get ran out of the gym, maybe it's time to think outside the box and let some of the younger guys decided not to dress. Maybe let them dress and maybe get some minutes, but they didn't. What's kind of funny is when they had that little stretch, I think it was right here in that closeout game in Game 6 in the second quarter when they went on this god awful 0-for-17 run where Oklahoma City pulled away and really just put the game away right there in the second quarter. They didn't even bring in their go-to guy off the bench for a bucket in Boris Diaw. They didn't even use a guy that Greg Popovich relied on to get some quick points. He decided not to use him, and they had a bunch of offers on that bench. And so here's the way that I look at this. I think, number one, Greg Popovich tried to simplify this thing to get to the Western Conference Finals. And two, I think Oklahoma City played well above over their heads because I got to be honest with you.
Yes.
I like Durant. You know I like Durant. You know how much I like Kevin Durant.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I can be okay on Russell Westbrook. But really, for the most part, you have two very, very good, if not great, ballers surrounded by a cast. That's okay. I'm not going to sit there and say that's surrounded by a great cast, but they're okay.
Right.
And when you're playing collectively and playing above your head and taking advantage of a team that maybe is trying to oversimplify things, you're going to win that series 10 times out of 10. So here's what I will say. I give credit to the Oklahoma City Thunder for taking down the San Antonio Spurs. It's not an easy thing to do. But when it comes to the Golden State Warriors, you're going to have to do what nobody has been able to do, including the Oklahoma City Thunder, which is play lockdown defense for four games. In order to capture that series, you got to do it four times. You might be able to do it once, and you might be able to do it twice. But the key to this thing is going to be rebounding, and it's also going to be able to limit the damage outside of Steph Curry. Because I think you and I think all of us can agree here, Steph Curry is going to be able to do whatever Steph Curry is going to be able to do, and nobody's going to be able to stop Steph. But it's, can you minimize the supporting cast? Can you minimize Klay Thompson? Can you minimize Harrison Barnes? Can you minimize the damage done inside the paint with Draymond Green? If you can do that, you have a really good opportunity at advancing to the NBA Finals. But I got to be honest with you, man. This thing tells me that Golden State is just going to be too much for Oklahoma City.
Yeah, this is Russell Westbrook's series. This is his series. Look, for all the intents and purposes, this is the series that Russell Westbrook needs to prove himself that he is defensively ready to absolutely dominate Steph Curry. This is his series. Look, if Russell Westbrook wants to be seen as a champion, he has to dominate Steph Curry in this series. Absolutely obliterate him defensively, offensively. This is the series for him. It has to be. It just has to be. And so for that, Steve, I got to let you go. We're running out of time here. Thank you again for calling in. Absolutely fantastic stuff there. From Steve Silver, my man from the Seattle area. No debate there. Chris, it was really good hearing from you, man. Hey, good stuff. Again, go check out his article on simplyhoopsportsblog.com. Again, NBA playoff format. Fun stuff there. Hey, Chris, get you on here again sometime, man. Obviously, you're always welcome.
Definitely, man. I'll definitely be tuning in a lot more now. You know, I'm trying to catch the show and love talking hoops, man.
Heck yeah, man. This is the place to do it. We're the Hoopers Log, man. We're not shy from anyone or anything. We had a caller on the line. He apparently, unfortunately, dropped off the line, but that's okay. Hey, we got about a minute left on the show. Episode 139. Yeah, Chris, I didn't know if you know this, but we had 139 episodes up until now. We've gone November 2nd, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We're going to go to Monday, Wednesday, Friday next week. So we'll be back on Monday, May 16th, 2016. Episode 139 is in the books. Episode 140 on Monday. We'll preview the Western and Eastern Conference Finals, and we'll recap what happened over the weekend. If there is a Game 7, obviously Toronto and the Heat are playing right now. So with that, Chris, thank you again for joining.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, and we'll get out of here on that. Thank you again, everybody. Enjoy the weekend. Get outside. Have some fun. Have a good one. Enjoy yourselves, everybody.
All right.